Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, Perek Mem Vav. In the previous Perek, so the Medrash, which we didn't learn yet, but in the previous Perek in Mem Hei, so the Medrash goes through the whole story of the Chet HaEgel, of the golden calf that the Jews did at Har Sinai. Now it's going to speak about what happened at Har Sinai in a more general way about Matan Torah and about the aftermath of the story of the golden calf. Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah Omer. Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah says, Erev Shabbos b'shisha l'chodesh, on Erev Shabbos, on a Friday, b'shisha l'chodesh, on the 6th of the month, meaning the 6th day of Sivan, which we're saying came on a Friday, b'shesh shalis b'yoyim, at 6 hours into the day, meaning midday, kiblu Yisrael es adibros, the Jews accepted the dibros, the words of Hashem, the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments. The interesting thing, the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos brings a argument between two sages, between the Chachamim and between the sages, between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi, what day was Matan Torah? Did the Jews accept the Torah on Vav Sivan or in Zayin Sivan? That's the Machlekes in the Gemara. And the Gemara says, but everybody agrees that the Torah was given on Shabbos. That's what the Gemara says. Everyone agrees the Torah is given on Shabbos. The question is, was Vav Sivan Shabbos or was Zayin Sivan Shabbos? And the Gemara says that the Machlokes is really how to calculate the calendar of that year. Was Nisan was full, but was Iyar a full month or not a full month or whatever, to come out what day of the week was Matan Torah was. Assuming Matan Torah was on Shabbos, what day of the month was that Shabbos? Was it Vav Sivan or Zayin Sivan? Right? So we celebrate Shavuos on Vav and Zayin Sivan, or really Vav Sivan, and the Chutz Lars Vav and Zayin. But that's the Machlekes in the Gemara and Shabbos. So over here, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is taking an opinion that's not like either of those two opinions of the Gemara. He's saying that, no, first of all, it was on Erev Shabbos. It wasn't on Shabbos. And second of all, it was on the 6th of the month, of the 6th of Sivan, not the 7th of Sivan. Meaning, in the Gemara, there's an opinion that holds that the 6th of Sivan was Erev Shabbos. But that opinion holds that the Torah was given on Zayin Sivan. Because the Gemara says everyone agrees that the Torah was given on Shabbos. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds like that opinion in understanding the structure of the calendar for that year, but disagrees that the Torah was given on Zion. He says, no, it wasn't given on Zion, it was given on Vav, which was Erev Shabbos. But that's this line over here, vis-a-vis the Gemara and Shabbos. There's an interesting piece in the Mishnah Berurah. He writes in Hilchos Shavuos, the Mishnah Berurah brings, one of the reasons why do we eat milchigs, dairy products, specifically on Shavuos. So the Mishnah Berurah says that one of the reasons is because when they got the Torah, so they didn't have any fleishig vessels. They didn't have meaty vessels to cook their meat in. So therefore, they specifically ate milchigs, dairy products. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says. Now, elsewhere, the same person, the author of the Mishnah Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan, so he writes in a different sefer of his called Likutei Halachos on Maseches Chulin. In the back of Likutei Halachos on Maseches Chulin, he writes that he brings this opinion again, and he says that opinion in why we eat milchigs on Shavuos only works according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah that the Torah is given on Friday. Because if the Torah is given on Shabbos, even if you had fleishig dishes, you can't cook meat anyways because it's Shabbos, you can't cook. So you have to say that whole understanding only goes with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who said that the Torah is given on Friday. Another point over here, this is a very interesting idea, Rabbi Liomi Izmir, says that the Torah was the Medrash says the Torah is given on Friday on the 6th of the month at 6 hours into the day. So he says, we're giving all these details. What's the point in giving all these details? He says it's a remez, an allusion to how the geula in the future is going to be. He says, Chazal tell us that there's 6,000 years, 6,000 year periods of the world, of the world's existence, right? So he says that In the sixth millennium, meaning in the 5,000 whatever, in the sixth millennium, the Mashiach is going to come, because just like the Torah was given on the sixth day of the week, on Friday, which is the sixth day of the week, six out of seven, so the Torah is going to be given in the sixth millennium, the sixth out of seven of the millennia. The Geula is going to happen then. And so it's just like the Medrash says that it happened on Erev Shabbos, 6 hours into the day, halfway into the day. So too, he says that that's gonna be mimicked in what year the Geula is going to happen. So if you make a cheshbon, the implications of what he's saying is like this, that it's going to be 5,000 something, right? So 5,000 what? So you have to do 6 hours into the day, which if 6 hours into the day is really three fourths of the day, because you have the whole night, which is 12 hours, 6 hours into the day, which is 18, right? And then you have the rest of the day, which is the last fourth of the day. So you have three fourths into the day. So you have three fourths into the sixth millennia, that's when Mashiach is going to come. That's what he says. So what does that come out to? That comes out to the year 5,750. Right, because 3/4 is 75%, which is, you know, out of 1,000 is 750. Right, you have that. Now the year 5,750 is, of course, 1990. So it seems like he's wrong. I don't know.
But the Rebbe made a very big deal about that year.
About the year 1990, what did he say?
He said it was the year of miracles and everything else, because he brought that down. What you're saying.
Really? He mentioned this?
Oh, yeah.
Now, also, it could be that there are Mefarshim that say that because we got out of Mitzrayim early, so there's extra years to the Galus that are supposed to be appended to our current Galus. So, like, maybe if you add in... It, really, the Gula for the end of our Galus is supposed to be 1990, and if you add in a few more years to make up to finish off the 400 years that we were supposed to be in Mitzrayim, so then maybe it'll be a little bit longer. So maybe it's not completely wrong. I don't know. We'll just Chiniske v'nichya v'nira. We should merit to see it, and it'll happen in our days. Fine. So that was 6 hours into the day. That's when they got the Torah on Erev Shabbos. Now, how long did Matan Torah happen? A lot of people ask this question. Well, the Medrash explains it. Medrash says, 9 hours into the day, the Jews returned to their tents. So the Matan Torah started 6 hours into the day, let's say 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and they went back home 9 hours into the day, which is about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Right? Fine. Medrash says an interesting line. It says, V'hoya haman muchan lahem l'shnei yamim. And the mon was prepared for them for 2 days. Because we're talking about Friday. On Friday there was double mon. So it says the mon was prepared for them for 2 days. Not sure what exactly is it trying to say over here. It could be, and it seems like that the Marzu is sort of trying to say this idea, and maybe the Radal is also saying this, that the Medrash is trying to answer a question. You know, if they were so busy, they came home 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, where do they get ready for Shabbos? Like, when do they start doing their preparations? So the Medrash is sort of answering that question by saying, no, everything was already prepared. They didn't have to worry about cooking or whatever because they already had their mon from early in the morning. The mon came early in the morning, so they were already prepared. They were good for Friday and Shabbos, and they didn't have to do any preparations, so they could, you know, they could go home at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's not such a big deal. It could be that's what the Medrash is saying over here. Lefichach, says the Medrash, therefore, shav su ba'isei Shabbos, they rested on that Shabbos, smeichem b'simcha sachag, they were happy with the happiness of the Chag, of the Yom Tov. Now, the Rada asks the question, he says, what do you mean? We said the Torah was given on the 6th of Sivan, right? So this next day, that Shabbos, is the 7th of Sivan. That's not Shavuos anymore. So what does it mean? Smeichem b'simcha sachag. They're happy with the happiness of the Yom Tov. It's not really Yom Tov. It's 7th of Sivan. It's not really Shavuos. In Chutzlars, we do 7th of Sivan, but really Shavuos is the 6th. So the Radal says that you have to change the gears. It says, "Smeichem kistim chasachag." They were happy that Shabbos as if it was a Yom Tov. It wasn't really treated as a Yom Tov. The happiness was on the level as if it was a Yom Tov, but it wasn't. They didn't treat it as an actual Yom Tov. Why were they so happy? Shabbai shamu kalor shal kadosh baruch hu, because then they heard the voice of Hashem. Shneimar, it says in the pasuk, "Kimi kol basar asher shama kalor likim chayim." Who is a who of flesh heard the voice of the living God speak? At the end of the pasuk says, "Medaber mitecha esh," speaking from the fire, "Kamoinu vayachi," like we did and survived. Who was able to hear Hashem speak like us and survive? Nobody. So they were very happy, and that was the cause for this great happiness that they had on that day. Fine. So that was the story of Matan Torah, in the first stage of Matan Torah. They heard it from Hashem, and they were happy, and there was a Shabbos afterwards, etc. Now afterwards, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Maisha B'Lashay Nikiya. Hashem said to Maisha Rabbeinu, B'Lashay Nikiya, in a clean language, in a clean expression. He said to him, Lech Amar LeYisrael L'Chu Ish La'Ahalo. He said, go tell the Jews that each person should go to his tent. Shinamar, it says in the Pasuk, Lech Amar Lehem Shuvu Lechem La'Ahalechem. It says, go tell them that they should return to their tents. So what does it mean, their tents? So their tent is an allusion to their wives. It didn't want to say their wives straight out because, you know, that's not considered proper speech. So the Lashon Nekiya was said in a clean way. In a nice way of saying it, it didn't say, go back to your wife. It said, you know, go back to your tent. It's also trying to be ramiz that what a person does with his wife should be in a tent, shouldn't be publicized, shouldn't be in a public area. That's what it means, return to your tent. Because previously, Hashem had told the Jews that they have to separate from their wives in anticipation of Matan Torah. They have to separate their wives. You should prepare for 3 days. Don't approach a woman. Means you should separate from your wife for 3 days before Matan Torah. So now Hashem is saying you can go back to your wife. Everyone can go back to their wife. I mean, there's also, it's a little bit technical, and I don't want to really get into this over here. But there is a discussion over what's the purpose of this pasuk where it says go back to shuvu lechem la'olechem, you return to your wife, to your tents, return to your wives. What's the purpose of it? Is it coming to tell you that they were previously forbidden to their wives and now we're saying now you're permitted to wives? Is that all it's coming to do, just to rescind the original prohibition? Or is it coming to tell us another verse that's going to be the mitzvah of puravu? Is this pasuk another mitzvah puravu? It's another instance of the mitzvah? Or is it just coming to tell you that what was forbidden now, before, is now mutar? There's different ways to look at it, and whatever. It's a technical question, but there is such a discussion. Fine. Says the Medrash, Yochoil af ato tashuv. You would have thought that when Hashem said that everyone should return to their tents, so he was saying, also you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you should also return to your tent, return to your wife. Ela milamed, rather, it's coming to teach you, Shemiyam shenitna Torah liYisrael, leikar of Moshe etzel ishtai. From the day that the Torah is given to the Jews, Moshe Rabbeinu did not approach his wife. Shenamar, it says in the pasuk, V'ata poi amaydi madi. And you should stand over here with me. That's what Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu. So he said, everyone return to your tents, but you, Moshe, should stand over here with me.
Wasn't Zipporah gone anyways? We learned later that she wasn't there for Matan Torah. When Yisro came...
It's a shiloh when Yisro came. If Yisro came before Matan Torah, if Yisro came after Matan Torah.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's a good... Yeah, I hear what you're asking.
That was Aaron the Miriam's...
Complaint.
Complaint. That he wasn't with her?
That he wasn't with his wife, right.
Because that was obviously...
It's also,
later.
I mean, there's a similar Gemara. The Gemara says that, the Gemara Yevamos says that Moshe Rabbeinu did three things of his own decision, of his own choice. One of them was that he separated from his wife. One of them was that he broke the Luchos. And one of them was that he added an extra day of preparation before Matan Torah. So when it says that he decided to separate from his wife, so the Gemara says that he made a Kal V'Chomer. He said that, just like when Hashem wanted to speak to Bnei Yisrael, so they had to separate for their wives, so me, who Hashem can speak to me unexpectedly, and I don't know when He's going to speak to me, so for sure I should separate from my wife. So that's why he separated from his wife. And the Gemara says, and Hashem agreed to him post facto, and that's why it says, Vata poya mayri madi. Hashem said, you should stand with me. Post facto, Hashem agreed to him. So in the Gemara, it sounds like it was coming, the idea that he should separate from his wife was coming from Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Over here, it sounds like it came from Hashem. Okay, it's a slight variation. But the Radal brings that in the Zohar, it says that from the time that Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu at the burning bush, from then on he's separated from his wife. And he finds an allusion to this in the pasuk. The Zohar finds an allusion to this in the pasuk. It says, "Shal ne alacha me'al raglecha," take your shoe off your foot. So somehow that has to do with marriage or something like that. I don't know. I don't exactly understand it, but that's what the Radal says.
Because in chalitza.
But yeah, by chalitza, you take the woman takes off the shoe. So, okay, so it still requires an explanation. I don't know exactly. Fine, let's go weiter. Let's go further. Rabbi Shul ben Karcha Omer. Rabbi Shul ben Karcha says, "Arboim yoim osa Moshe Bahar." Moshe Rabbeinu spent 40 days on the mountain. Now we're saying that, right, the matter was by Shavuos, Vav, or Zayin, Sivan, or whatever. Moshe Rabbeinu went. The Jews after Vav or Zayin, after the original giving of the Torah, so the Jews went back to their tents. Moshe Rabbeinu stayed up with Hashem. So Moshe Rabbeinu stayed up in Hashem. Arboim yoim osa Moshe Bahar. Moshe Rabbeinu stayed at the mountain for 40 days. Kore b'mikra b'yoyim v'shena b'mishna b'alayla. Moshe Rabbeinu read Mikra during the day, meaning he read, let's say, Tanakh or Torah Shebichsav during the day, and he was learning Mishnah at night. He was learning Mishnah, meaning he was studying Torah Shebaal Peh at night. So we're going to focus a little bit on this. Why is he studying Tafka Torah Shebichsav during the day and Torah Shebaal Peh at night? We're going to have to focus on that a little bit. But just the Pashat Pshat, the Bayis HaGadol says, and the Radal say, that the Pshat is that, well, it's very simple. Torah Shebichsav is written down. Now, if you want to learn something that's written down, you want to be able to read it, so you need light. You need to be able to see it. So when is there light? During the day. So that's why you learn Torah Shebichsav during the day. Torah Shebaal Peh, you don't need to see anything. You know it by heart. So Torah Shebaal Peh is the oral Torah. Is you have it in your head, or you have it verbally, so you don't need light. So you can learn it at night, so you learn that at night. That's like the Pashat Pshat. Now the Rikanti, there's a few discussions over here, but let's start like this. The Rikanti, one of the early Kabbalah Svarim, he brings down a Parshas Yisro. Rikanti writes like this. He says, "Vida, you should know, kitzarech adam, a man has to lihisasik b'torah shebichsav b'yayim u'b'torah shebaal peh b'layla. A man has to study Torah shebichsav during the day and Torah shebaal peh at night." That's what the Rikanti says. Meaning, he's bringing, and he brings our Medrash over here. So he's bringing our Medrash as a source for how one should go about learning Torah. Specifically, Torah Shebichsav during the day, Torah Shebaal Peh at night. And we'll explain exactly why this should be. But just at face value, what he says over here. The Chida and Birkei Yosef also bring this down, and the Be'er Heitev also brings this down. So it's brought down in the Halacha Sfarim, that Torah Shebichsav during the day, Torah Shebaal Peh at night. Now, that sounds like, let's say, you're not supposed to learn Torah Shebichsav at night. That's what it seems to be saying, right? So why is that true? So the Mishnah Berurah writes in Arachayim, Simen Reish, Lamed Ches, Shar Tzion, Sifkot, and Aleph. Mishnah Berurah writes, no, it doesn't mean that there's an Isser to learn Torah Shebichsav at night, the written Torah at night. Rather, it means that if you have Torah Shebichsav, you have written Torah to learn, if you want to learn it during the day or during the night, it's better to learn it during the day than to learn it at night. But it doesn't mean you're not allowed to learn it during the night. It just means that it's better during the day than during the night. Right? That's the halachic aspect. But the idea is, what's the machshava aspect over here of why Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, is supposed to be studied during the day? What does it have to do with day? And the oral Torah, what does it have to do with night? What's going on over here? So it's like this. When we talk about day and night, so you could say like this. Day and night is, the day is typified by the sun, and the night is typified by the moon. And once we understand that, we could say like this. The relationship between the sun and the moon is a relationship between a mashpia and a makabel. One who influences and one who receives influence. The sun, the moon doesn't have its own light. The shine of the moon is really a reflection of the light of the sun coming from the moon. Right? So the sun is really the one that's giving the hashpa, the one who's giving off influence, influencing something else. And the moon is receiving its influence from the sun. So the sun typifies the giver of influence, and the moon typifies the recipient of influence. Yeah. Another difference between the sun and the moon is the way it works. Is the sun is more or less the same sun every single day. It's one ball over there in the sky, it doesn't change. it doesn't change. The moon, on the other hand, waxes and wanes. It gets bigger, it gets smaller, it changes around, whatever. That's the way the moon works. Another difference is that the sun stays in the same place. It's static. It's stationary. It doesn't move. The sun, everything revolves around the sun. But the sun itself stays in the middle. The moon, on the other hand, is the opposite. The moon revolves around us. Goes around us. So in a way, if you want to compare it to the relationship between a man and a woman, which, if you know a little bit of myth of pagan mythology, that's what they do in a lot of places. You know, Baal and Asherah is the sun and the moon. Or in Greek mythology, you have Apollo and Diana, which are the sun and the moon. It's the same idea. So the sun is obviously the Zohar, the male force, and the moon is the female force. Right? So it's the same idea that the male force is Mashpia, gives off influence, it provides, and the female force accepts it and then, you know, builds upon whatever it receives. In the same way, the male force is in the inside, and the female force is surrounds it. The pasuk says in the keva tesevev gever, the female surrounds the man. That's why the kala goes around the chasen 7 times by the chuppah, right? And the sun is like a chasen in a way. In Perek Shira, it says that the sun, the shira of the sun, is that it says Hashemayim esapim kivaykel ma'aseyado magid arakia. That's what the shira of the sun is, and it says a few psukim later. It says, "What about the sun? Hu kechasen yetsa michuppasai." The sun is like a chasen coming out of his chuppah. So the sun is like the male force, right? And the Gemara says that kala darbalei isha kilu darbalei chayma. A person who lives without a wife is like he's living without a wall. What's a wall? The wall surrounds whatever is being protected. So the nekeva, the force of the nekeva, also surrounds the zohar. That's the idea of the moon. So we have these different ideas of the sun and the moon, the day and night, whatever. Okay, so how does this work into Torah Shabbat Sav and Torah Shabbat Peh? So there's a few ways you can say it. You can say it like this. In a Pashut way, you could say that Teresh B'Chsav and Teresh Peh is like Zohar and Nekeva. Teresh B'Chsav is the raw material, the raw seed that the Zohar provides, and the Nekeva works on it. So Teresh B'Chsav is like, it's the raw text, it's just there, it is what it is, and the Teresh B'Chsav Peh develops it more into something greater, something bigger than the actual source. That's one way of looking at it. Another way you could say it is that Teresh B'Chsav is a focus on the giver. What does it say in Torah Shebichtav? Koyamar Hashem, it says, Zeh Dover Asher Tziva Hashem, Vayedaber Hashem Al Moshe Lemar. The focus is on Hashem giving over the Torah. The focus is on the influencer. So that's why it has to do with the Shemesh during the day. Mashenkin Torah Shebal Peh, so what does it say in Torah Shebal Peh? Omer Rebbe Kiva, Divrei Rebbe Meir, Chachamim Omrim, etc. The focus is not on Hashem, the focus is on the people that received the Torah, how they understand it and how they're saying it over. So there it's a focus on the recipient. So the Torah Shabbat Peh is Dafka Matim to the night, which is the moon. The moon is the recipient. Another similar way you could say it is that like the Torah Shabbat Chsav is a static text. It doesn't change. The text is what the text is. It doesn't, you know, there's no changes. There's no different gersos. We don't work with different gersos, and there's no havamina maskana. The Torah is it's a static text. So the shemesh, which the shemesh is the same thing every day. It doesn't change. Masha Enkin, the Torah Shabbat Peh is like the moon, because the moon is more fluid. It changes. It's more fluctuations. By Torah Shabbat Peh, you have a havamina, you have a maskana. Something changed between the havamina and the maskana. You have different kirsos, you have different, all kinds of different changes. You have, so the Torah Shabbat Peh is a development. It's coming out like the moon. It waxes and wanes. So these are different ideas why Dafka Moshe Rabbeinu studied Torah Shabbat Chsav during the day and Torah Shabbat Peh at night. There's a few questions you can ask. You say, what do you mean? David HaMelech said Tehillim at night. Right? So Tehillim is Torah Shabbat Chsav. So why does it say it at night? Maybe we'll get an answer to that. Okay, let's go weiter. Ulaachar arboim yoim, after 40 days, lokach es aluches v'yored el machane. After 40 days, Moshe Rabbeinu took the Luchos and he came down to the camp, of where Klal Yisrael was encamped. Uveshiva Asar Betamos Shiber Es HaLuchos. Actually, it's not clear what the gear says. Is it Shiber Es HaLuchos or Shavar Es HaLuchos? On the 17th of Tammuz, Moshe Rabbeinu was Shiber Es HaLuchos, means he smashed the Luchos, like a very intense way of doing it. Or Shavar Es HaLuchos, he broke the Luchos. What does your gear say?
Shiber,
okay.
I would say that makes more sense. Angry and
threw them. So Shiber Es HaLuchos, he smashed them. Vaharag Es Laita Yisrael. And he killed the cursed ones of Bnei Yisrael, meaning he killed the ones who had engaged in the worship of the golden calf. The Ramban has a different girsa that he killed Vaharag Es Chayte Yisrael, the sinners of Klal Yisrael. Layit means the curse. So like the cursed ones, who are the cursed ones? Those are the sinners. Could be it's the same thing. It's the same shot. There's, what, which word we, does the Medrash choose? Va'asa Arbaim Yoim Bamachaneh. And Moshe Rabbeinu spent 40 days in the Machane, in the camp of Bnei Yisrael. Ad Shesaref Es HaEgel, until he burnt the Egel, V'chitzvei Ka'afar HaAretz, and he disintegrated it like the dirt of the land. V'harag Es Kol Asher Nashak LeEgel, and he killed everyone, executed everyone who had kissed the calf. Which the Radal points out that all these things happened on actually the day after the Yud Zayin Tammuz. So this is all the day after. And the next thing, this is what really took him 40 days. V'hichris Avodah Zarah Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu cut off the existence of Avodah Zarah from within Klal Yisrael. And the Radal says that means that he went around and tried to find who has some sort of small root, some sort of small inclination towards Avodah Zarah. And he went and he chastised them and tried to bring them back to Tshuva so that they, you know, that it wouldn't grow into fruition. It wouldn't blossom into fruition and become full-fledged of Avodah Zarah at a later point. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu did. V'hiskin kol shevet b'mkeimai. And he instituted each tribe in its place. The Radal explains that when Bnei Levi went and killed all those who had worshipped the golden calf, so there was somewhat of a civil war amongst Bnei Yisrael, so things became chaotic and people had moved around or whatever. So Moshe Rabbeinu spent time to just reorganize everyone and make sure that each person is with his own family, with his own shevet, etc. So it says that Moshe Rabbeinu spent 40 days doing this in the camp. So again, we had from Shavuos until Yud Zayin Tammuz, Moshe Rabbeinu was up, that was 40 days. Moshe Rabbeinu was up in the mountain getting, you know, the first luchos. Yeah. From Yud Ches Tammuz, for the next 40 days, Moshe Rabbeinu was in the camp dealing with all these different issues that arise. He was trying to fix up, reorganize, get rid of the roots of Avodah Zarah, etc. Fix up everything. Yeah. So now, that's 40 days. Now, where are we holding?
Chavtes.
We're holding Chavtes Av, right? That was Rosh Chodesh Elul. Okay, the day before Rosh Chodesh Elul. Right? And now, afterwards, the Medrash talks about what happens Rosh Chodesh Elul. Okay. Now, I'm sure you're wondering that this narrative is not what you're familiar with. Whoa! Right? The matter, you're probably familiar with what Rashi and Chumash says. Rashi and Chumash says that Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai for three periods of 40 days. From Shavuos till Yud Zayin Tammuz, he went up to get the first luchos. From Yud Ches Tammuz until Rosh Chodesh till Chavtes Av, he went up to ask for Mechila, and then from Rosh Chodesh Elul until Yom Kippurim, Moshe Rabbeinu was up there getting the second pair of luchos. That's what Rashi and Chumash says, and Rashi is following really Seder Olam Perek Vav, which says this pshat. And Rashi, usually, as we've mentioned before, that Rashi usually goes with Seder Olam. So that's the Seder Olam's pshat. Rashi and Seder Olam go like that. And over here, we're saying a slightly different thing. We're saying, no, the first 40 days, yeah, we agree with the first 40 days. The second 40 days, no, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go up Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu was in the camp taking care of all these issues that came about. He was trying to get rid of the Avodah Zarah in the camp and trying to reorganize the Shvatim. He was in the camp. He didn't go up Har Sinai the second 40 days. So what it seems over here is there's a machlekes between Pirkei de Eliezer and Seder Olam. Machlekes. Now, it's interesting, there's two pieces of the Gra about this. The Gra in Aderes Eliyahu, in Parashas Kisisa, he writes, he brings this machlekes, and he says that Pashup Shat in the Psukim sounds like Pirkei d'Eliezer. And he endorses the pshat of the Pirkei d'Eliezer. He goes like the Pirkei d'Eliezer. Which is interesting because like the mainstream pshat is like Seder Olam and Rashi, and the Goyin doesn't go like that. The Goyin goes like Pirkei d'Eliezer. He says that that's the pshat and that's the psukim. It's true. It's too technical right now to take out a chumash and go through the psukim and see how really it could be. The Goyin is probably right anyways, that the pashup shot in the psukim does sound like Moshe Rabbeinu hung out, but he stayed in the machana during the second 40 days. It's true. But that's not what they teach in the Chadar. I don't know about your cheder. We learn Rashi. Rashi says he went up for the second 40 days. Now the Goyin, there's another piece of the Goyin. The guy in his Pirush on Seder Olam also brings the Machlekes, Pirkei d'Eliezer, and the Seder Olam. And the guy says a different shot over there. The guy tries to reconcile these two explanations. The Radal calls it a Deichek. And it does sound very funny what the guy does, but Lamaisa, he sort of bridges the gap between them. The guy says that really, Moshe Rabbeinu, he didn't go up the mountain the second time for 40 days. That's not what he did. But he spent 40 days down in the Machane taking care of all these problems. But during those 40 days, every day he went up the mountain to daven and came back down. So really both are right. Really he was in the Machane for 40 days, for the second 40 days. And Seder Olam is also right that he went up during the second 40 days. Because each day he went up and came back down. That's how the Goyin reconciles these two approaches of the Pirkei d'Eliezer and the Seder Olam. And now, if you want, you can go call up Kupa the Ear and tell them, you see, there's a school of 40 days, go daven Har Sinai. It's a big thing. Where do these things come from? It comes from like something like this, that Moshe Rabbeinu went up for 40 days. He went, you go to the Kristallah every day for 40 days, you go to the Kiver or whatever for 40 days. That's like a similar idea.
Right.
Huh. Nice. Lahavdil. Maybe. Fine. Says the Medrash. On Rosh Chodesh Elul, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Moshe. On Rosh Chodesh Elul, Hashem said to Moshe, Alei Elai HaHara, come up to me on the mountain, to the mountain. So Hashem said, Moshe Rabbeinu, come back to the mountain. Come back up to me. Now, the problem is that if Moshe Rabbeinu goes back up the mountain, we're going to have a problem over here because maybe people are going to do Avodah Zarah like the first time he went up. So what do they do to get out of the problem? And you're going to have to help me understand how this helps, but this is what it says in the Medrash. The Haviru Shofar b'chol ha-machane. They passed a shofar through the entire camp, meaning they blew shofar through the whole camp. Shari Moshe ayla lahar, because behold, Moshe is going up the mountain. Shal yitu oid achar ha-avodah zarah, so that people won't stumble, so people won't err again after avodah zarah. How does this help? How does blowing the shofar help? Okay, well, we'll have to speak about it let's just finish a few lines. HaKadosh Baruch Hu nisala oisei hayom ba'oisei shofar, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was brought up on that day through that shofar. It says the pasuk, Olo elikim b'shua Hashem b'kol shofar. Hashem elikim goes up through the trua. Hashem goes up through the call of the shofar, through the voice of the shofar. V'alkein hiskinu chachomim, and because of this, therefore, the rabbis, the sages instituted shiyu taken by shofar b'shchedesh elul b'chol shana b'shana, that you should blow the shofar on b'shchedesh elul every single year. Okay, so there's like a lot of things that we just read over here. What do they do here? They blew the shofar when Moshe Rabbeinu went up the mountain so that people won't make a mistake after Avodah Zarah. How does that help? What do you say?
I don't know.
The Radal wants to say that the sort of a pshat is that blowing the shofar, first it says that blowing the shofar sort of symbolized that, like, okay, we're guarding, we're making a gedder, we're making a fence that we're not going to do Avodah Zarah anymore. This is like our establishing, we're not doing Avodah Zarah. Not clear exactly how blowing the shofar did that. Then the Radal sort of says a different pshat, that blowing the shofar is a way of establishing the Malchus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara in Sechus Rosh Hashanah says, Imru lefanei Malchiyos Kadishitam lechuni aleichem. Say in front of me, Malchiyos, in Musaf of the Musaf Shemana Esrei of Rosh Hashanah, so we say three special brachas. Machias, Rechonis, and Shefres. So what's Machias? It says, Imru Fanim Machias Kadesh Tam Lechuni Alechem. Say Machias in front of me, so in order to make me into your king. Right? And then it says, why do we say Zechreinais? Kedesh Yala Zechreincha Lefan of Latoiva. So Hashem will remember us for good. And the Gemara says, Ubameh. And how should all of this come about? B'shayfar. Through a shayfar. So the Radal draws from that Gemara that through the shayfar, we bring out the Malchus of Hashem. B'chatei says, V'kol shayfar haril lufnei ha-melech Hashem. That's the pasuk in them. With chatzitzas and the call of the voice of a shofar, you cry out in front of Hashem. When the king comes, they blow trumpets in order to announce the coming of the king. So when you blow the shofar, you're announcing the coming of Hashem, and that brings out the covet of Hashem. So when Moshe Rabbeinu went up the mountain, they're announcing, you know, Hashem is coming. Hashem is on his way, or at least within the next 40 days or so. So they blew the shofar in order to solidify that idea, in order to announce it. That's pashup shat, sort of what's happening over here.
But it was only on one day, according to this. Rosh Chodesh Elul.
That's what it, okay, so right.
He left.
So that...
We blow every day, and you think every day you should remember. Don't do it on God. And yet here it says.
So hold on to that thought. We'll get back to that thought in a moment. The Maharami Rutenberg, one of the Gedolei Ashkenaz, Rishonim of Ashkenaz, Maharami Rutenberg has a sefer called Minhagim Debei Maharam, on page 37. The Maharami Rutenberg writes that the reason why they blew shofar when Moshe Rabbeinu went up the mountain is in order to confuse the Satan, so that the Satan won't try to get them to do Avodah Zarah. That's why they blew the shofar, to confuse the Satan, so the Satan won't get them to do Avodah Zarah. That's what the Maharam writes. And the Rosh, in the end of Maseches Rosh Hashanah, brings this piece of Pirkei Deblazer over there, and he has a few... The Rosh over there, when he brings it, he adds another sentence. He says, so that they won't do Avodah Zarah, and so that they'll do Tshuva. Like the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, was it Perek Dalet, Perek Hey, I don't remember. The Rambam writes, what's the idea of the Shofar? The Rambam writes, even though the idea of a Shofar is Gzeres HaMelech, it's, you know, a scriptural imperative, it's because that's the cause of the Torah says you have to blow shofar, and that's what it is, but it also has some sort of symbolism, because it's reminding you, wake up, you people, from your slumber, and do tshuva. That's what the Rambam says. So that's idea. There's like an inherent idea in the shofar to remind you to do tshuva. So the Rosh is sort of saying that's why they blew shofar when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai, to remind people to do tshuva also. Probably part of doing tshuva for the Cheder Eagle or something like that. That's what the Rosh writes. There's another Nekuda also in the Rosh. The Rosh writes like this. The Rosh brings our Medrash, and then afterwards, the Rosh writes that the minig in Ashkenaz is that the entire month you blow shofar during the day and in the evening after davening. And nowadays, Al Pi the Ramah, we only do it in the morning after Shacharis. But there are, I think, Yekas maybe, they do it also after Ma'ariv, I believe. Maybe some Yekas, they do it also after Ma'ariv. That the source is from this Rosh. That's the source for blowing shofar during Elul. Now, you're right. The Rosh brings our Medrash, the way we have it in front of us, it says that they blew it on Rosh Chodesh Elul, and then it says, and the rabbis instituted you should blow it every year on Rosh Chodesh Elul, specifically the first day. And the Rosh says, besides that, there's a minhag to do it every day of Elul. So our medrash is not the direct source for blowing shofar during Elul. It's derived from our medrash. It's not directly. Our Medrash says Rosh Chodesh Elul, and then they took, I guess, the minhag became to take it a step further. The minhag Ashkenaz was to take it a step further and blow every day during Elul. The Radal points out that the Tur, when the Tur in Simen Tov Kuf Pei Aleph in Archaim talks about this. The Tur changes the lashon of the Pirkei de Eliezer when he brings it, and he says that they were mesaken that you should blow shofar b'chol shana v'shana u'b'chol chodesh, and the entire month. So the Tur already brings Pirkei de Eliezer as the source for blowing shofar during the entire Elul. And Minhag HaMaor also has the same girsa.
Did you find that?
What? In the manuscripts of Pirkei de Eliezer? No, I did not. Maybe they had a different version. Maybe they're just taking the minhag and interpreting Pirkei de Eliezer in light of what the minhag was. But the Radal agrees with this girsa that it says in the entire month, because he is bothered by your question. He says, what do you mean? Why does it help that they won't stray after Avodah Zarah to just blow the first day that he went up? The last time that they strayed, it wasn't the first day Moshe Rabbeinu left. It was the last day. It was like the 39th day.
That was saying Dafka should blow Erev Rosh Hashanah, which is the day we Dafka don't blow.
Well, one second. Okay. So he says that Avada, he says, for sure the Girsa has to be that you have to do it the whole month. To blow every day so that they won't end up making a mistake. Okay, you're asking another question. You're asking, well, then it should come out that really the Iker day of blowing Shofar is going to be the day before Rosh Hashanah, even though nowadays our meaning is not to blow the day before Rosh Hashanah. Okay, it could be, but you're still not losing the idea of blowing each day so that they won't stray after Avodah Zarah. The reason why we don't blow on Erev Rosh Hashanah is, you know, a more technical reason, because we want to make a separation between blowing of a minhag and blowing of a chiyuv. What other reasons did you hear?
Zev said because if you do it, or he brought a grub, the reason why we don't blow is because if you do for Shloshim Yom, you create a chazakah of some kind, and I don't understand that.
Well, and then so now what?
If don't do it for Shloshim Yom, so you do it for 29 days.
Okay.
Erev Rosh Hashanah being the Yom Shloshim.
Yeah, there's
and all. And then the question was, well, Shabbos we don't blow, but anyway, then they came around that and they had a.
Yeah, there's different minhagim over here about it. The Radal brings from the Sefer Rekeach in Simon Reish Ches. The Rekeach writes that the minhag was to blow from Rosh Chodesh Elul until Yom Kippur. We don't do that. We stop at Rosh Hashanah. We don't blow during Aseret Yemei Teshuva. But they used to blow during Yom Kippur. Not during Aseret Yemei Teshuva, all the way up until Yom Kippur.
Which would actually make a lot more sense, because it was Yom Kippur that he came down the mountain.
Right.
So there's no point to blowing it.
Right. Wait a second. You just answered your question, by the way.
Yeah, I just realized that that's not.
Yeah, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't come down Erev Rosh Hashanah. He came down Erev Yom Kippur.
It was from Kippur. It needs to be 40 days.
Yeah, we just realized that also. But the Radal says the reason why we don't do like the Rekeach, because we understand that the source is the way the Tur has the Girsa in the Pirkei de Eliezer, which just says B'kol Shana U'B'chol HaChodesh, right? And then it's just that month. It's just the month of Elul. It's not including the first few days of Tishri as well. So therefore, we only blow during Elul, and then then we stop by Erev Rosh Hashanah. Actually, in the Maharami Rutenberg over there, he says that you stop 3 days before Rosh Hashanah. He doesn't say don't do it Erev Rosh Hashanah. He says don't do it for 3 days before Rosh Hashanah. Blow the whole Elul except for 3 days before Rosh Hashanah, which is interesting. He doesn't explain why or whatever, but I don't know exactly what the reason of the Maharami Rutenberg is. Another idea over here is the Maharami Rutenberg says another reason why we blow Shofar during the month of Elul. And the Maharami Rutenberg says a sort of practical idea. Why do we blow Shofar during the month of Elul? So the Maharami Rutenberg says that the pshat is because you want to get used to doing the mitzvah. Just like we say, Shailim v'darshim b'nyanei achag, shleshim yom kodem achag, 30 days before Yontif, before Pesach, before Sukkot, whatever, you start discussing the halachas and getting into it or whatever. So too, before Rosh Hashanah, for 30 days, you want to practice blowing shofar. That's what Maharami Rutenberg says. So, actually, Zevi Stark showed me in a sefer from Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach says a difference, a halachic nafkamina, between Maharami Rutenberg's pshat and what we've been saying until now. If the idea is it has to do with tshuva, and it has to do with not doing avodah zarah, it has to do with a zecher for what happened over there by Matan Torah, so then who should blow a shofar? It doesn't really matter who blows the shofar. The point is that the shofar was blown. But if you learn like the Maharami Rutenberg, that the point of blowing the shofar during Elul is to practice doing the mitzvah of shofar for Rosh Hashanah, it's the way of practicing for Rosh Hashanah, so then there's an inyan that specifically the same guy who's going to blow on Rosh Hashanah should blow the entire Elul. Because the whole thing is to practice. So who, what are you practicing for unless you're the guy who's going to be the one blowing? It's an interesting idea. I don't, what do people, what's the minhag? People, it's usually the same guy or it's usually not the same guy? I don't know.
I know that Reb Edelstein blows on Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
And my shver blows
during the week
in shul.
Uh-huh.
And then Reb Edelstein is standing there.
Interesting.
Not blowing. It's my shver, so.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting idea. If the whole thing is just to practice. So.
That's a lot of practice. I mean, not okay, it's not a lot of, it's shloshim yom, as you're saying, but still, it's not practice.
Yeah. Okay, before we go weiter, I wanted to speak about another nikuda over here. Okay, there it is. Okay. So we brought a pasuk. It says like this. It says, Olo elikim b'srua Hashem b'kol shefer. Hashem went up with the trua. Olo elikim, the elikim went up with the trua. Hashem went up with the voice of the shefer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the Mufarshim, Chazal tell us, there's a difference between when the pasuk, when the Torah uses, first of all, this pasuk, Allah Alekim Bishrua, Tehillim Mem Zayin, is the from that chapter of Tehillim that we say seven times before we start blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So Chazal tell us that the name of Hashem, and the name of Hashem, of Alekim, represent two different hanhagas that we perceive of Hashem. That it looks like Hashem acts with us in two different ways. The word, the name Hashem represents when Hashem acts with us with rachamim, and the name Elikim represents when Hashem acts with us with what we perceive to be din. Elikim is din, Hashem is rachamim. Yeah. So what's the difference between din and rachamim? So we've already spoken about this a few times, but the difference is that when we talk about rachamim, so the idea of rachamim is a focus on the giver. When we focus on din, when we talk about din, the focus is on the receiver. Rachamim is, you know, I'm giving no matter what. I don't care about you. I'm just giving. Din is, well, first we're going to look at you and see whether you deserve it or not. And if you deserve it, so then I'll give it to you. If you don't deserve it, I don't give it to you. Din is like, you know, withholding if you don't deserve it, if you're not ready for it or whatever. So first you have to look at the receiver before you can decide. I've said my Rebbe Rabbi Elio Margolis likes to say a mashal. I've said the mashal before. You have a gvir, a philanthropist, you know, who gives away a lot of money. So he has two ways of giving away a lot of money. The first way is on Purim. He has already pre-written and pre-signed a whole bunch of checks. Every check is for $100. And anyone who comes to him, automatically he gives you a $100 check. Doesn't matter what you're collecting for, $100 check. The rest of the year, the way it works is you come to his dining room, you sit down with him, you tell him what you're collecting for, and he says, okay, you deserve $5, you deserve $10, you $50, $100, you $500, you $1,000. Each person gets a different amount depending on whether it's a worthy cause, whether it's not a worthy cause, etc. So the first hanhaga, the first way of acting is what we call rachamim. Because he's just giving it out. It doesn't care whether you deserve it, you don't deserve it, who you are, whatever, I'm just giving it out. The second way, that's what we call din. Do you deserve? What do you deserve exactly? Let's figure it out. The focus is on you, not on the giver, the focus is on the receiver. Those are the two anhagas. Now, the idea of the shofar, the voice of the shofar, the sound of the shofar, the blowing of the shofar, is symbolizes the hashpa that we get from Hashem, the hashpa that the world receives from Hashem. It says in the pasuk when Hashem created man, which according to Rabbi Eliezer, Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, happened on Rosh Hashanah. Right, when Hashem created man, it says Vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim. Hashem blew into a man's nose a living soul. Right, Hashem blew into man, and the Nefesh HaChaim speaks about how, in order for the world to continue to exist, Hashem has to constantly be, quote-unquote, blowing into the world a shefa that will keep the world to continue existing. Right? So the shofar is meramis, the blowing into the shofar is meramis, is a remis to Hashem blowing into the world. giving us breath, giving us life. One of the differences between Din and Rachamim is that Rachamim is uninterrupted. It's constant. It's a continuous flow. When you talk about Din, so Din is an interrupted flow. Because Din, I have to stop and see. Do you deserve it? You don't deserve it? Okay, I'll give you now. Wait, now you don't deserve it. Okay, now I'm going to stop. Now you deserve it. I'll give you a little bit more. Now you don't deserve it. It's you know, stop, go, stop, go. Right? Masha'en Kein Rachamim is just one complete flow. So I was makabel from my Rebbeim that's the idea of a trua. A trua is the idea of din. A trua is it's multiple sounds together. It's either three sounds or nine sounds or three and then nine sounds. Right? It's not one continuous sound. It's a bunch of it goes, stops, goes, stops, goes, stops, etc. That's like din, where the din is it's not a continuous flow. It's a flow that's you know according to what you deserve, according to what's needed. That's the idea of trua. So that's
on Yom Din.
What? On Yom Din. So on Yom that's Yom why Din. It says over here, listen to this. That's why it says over here, Allah Elikim b'trua. Elikim goes up with trua. Because Elikim is Midas Adin. So Elikim is brought out through the trua. The idea of Midas Adin is brought out through the trua. But Hashem is Bakal Shaifar. Kal Shaifar means the tkiya. Hashem, which is Rachamim, the idea of Hashem is brought out through the call of the shofar, of the tkiya, which is the straight flow, the straight sound, without any interruptions. That's how to understand this pasuk over here. Although the kim b'shua, Hashem the call shofar. But there's another aspect. This is mamish, very interesting. The Sefer Kabbalah speaks out on Rosh Hashanah. We do something called Mesikas Adinim. Sweetening the din, making the din sweet. So what does that mean? You make the din sweet. So in a crude physical mashal, I can say that you take a din, yeah, which is I'll call it bitter, or it seems to be bitter, and you dip it into something sweet. Yeah? You take an apple, which is not necessarily so sweet, and you dip it into honey, which is sweet. You take the din and you're making the din sweet now. That's the idea of dipping an apple into honey. You're being mamtik the dinim. You're taking an apple and you're making it into something sweet. So the trua is the same thing. The trua is the din. It's a harsh dinim. Maybe, hopefully not, but trua is din. So what do? You dress it up. You take a tkiya, which is rachamim. You put a tkiya before it. You put a tkiya after it. And you sweeten the trua. Now it's not just a trua on its own. It's a trua with a little bit of rachamim before, a little bit of rachamim after, and that's the sweetening of the dinim that the Sefer Kabbalah are speaking about on Rosh Hashanah. That the Kabbalah Svarim say that tkiya shofar is mamtik the dinim. That's what they say. Tkiya shofar is mamtik the dinim. How so? So they say because the tkiya before and the tkiya after the trua, the tkiya before the trua and the tkiya after the trua sort of. I don't say neutralize, but sort of make it tone down the din. They make it a little bit sweeter. And the Ramban himself, actually, Parshas Amar, writes that Rosh Hashanah is Yom Din Berachamim. What is that? He says Rosh Hashanah is Yom Din Berachamim, and Yom Kippurim is Yom Rachamim Bedin. We'll leave Yom Kippurim aside. But what does it mean that Rosh Hashanah is Yom Din Berachamim? So you could take it literally. It's din, it's the apple. Inside rachamim, it's dipped in rachamim. It's dipped in honey, and honey is obviously the sweetest type of thing that's possible. It's like the epitome of sweetness. When David HaMelech writes in Tehillim that the Torah is the sweetest thing, so he says mesukim edvash menefesuvim. It's even sweeter than honey, right? What could be sweeter than honey to say that the Torah is sweeter than that? Nothing. That's why he said honey, right? That's the dinim, the mamtik, the dinim of Yom Kippur, of Rosh Hashanah. Al Kopanim, so you can say like this, that the day, as we said before, that the day is a focus on the mashpia, on the one who's giving hashpa. The sun is the mashpia, is the one who gives influence. Right? So the day is a time of rachamim. The night is a time of din, because it, you know, the night is typified by the moon. The moon is a recipient. And when we focus on the recipient, that's what din is. So the question is, so why do we say slichus at night? Okay, if you say slichos during the day, so it makes sense, because day is rachamim. But what about night? So, it seems like there's two types of night. There's a night, the first part of the night. The first part of the night is when the sun is going away. It's getting, or whatever, we're turning farther and farther away from the sun. We're getting away from the sun. So when it's going away, that's harsh dinim. Dinim kashim. Which we want Hashem to save us from. We don't want to get involved with dinim kashim. We don't play around. So the first part of the night, till the middle of the night, is harsh dinim. We don't want to get involved. We don't say slichas during time of harsh dinim. You know, the best thing to do is like run under a rock and hide. You know, that's what you do in the time of harsh dinim. From midnight till the beginning of the day, we're getting closer and closer to the sun. So the din is there. It's still din because there's no sun out. But it's sort of dissipating, it's coming closer and closer to the day. There, you already have an opening that it's in certain ways, it's a time of rachamim, and now you could say slichas. So that's why you have to wait dafka till chatzayis of the night. Tonight, we're going to say slichas. I mean, some people will say slichas after chatzayis, because then it's starting to, the rachamim is starting to come out after chatzayis, because we're getting closer to the sun. The sun is coming up soon. And I wanted to say that that's also the pshat in Dover Melch. We said that Torah Shebichsav, you're supposed to do during the day. Torah Shebalpeh, you're supposed to do at night. And I asked the question, what do you mean? David HaMelech, Pasuk says, in Tehillim, I think Kuf Yates, I wake up in the middle of the night to praise you. And the Gemara talks about how David HaMelech had a harp, and the wind would blow in the middle of the night and wake him up, and then he'd start davening, whatever. The Gemara Bracha has a whole story about it. But what do you mean? I understood that he was saying Tehillim. Maybe you can have a different understanding. I understood he was saying Tehillim. Because what else was David Melch saying, right?
That's my opinion.
What?
That he would wake up at that time and say Shvachos.
Shiras is Shvachos.
Shiras is Shvachos. That's not only one opinion. There's several opinions there. He would learn.
Okay, fine. But let's say he was saying Shiras is Shvachos. I understand that that's Tehillim. So why was he saying Tehillim? Tehillim is Hershvachsav. It's at night. So the answer is because it's after Chatzis. After Chatzis is not the harsh dinim of the rest of the night. After Chatzis is already an opening for Rachamim. Okay, that's my thoughts on that pasuk of Allah Likim Bishua Hashem Bekoil Shofar. What time is it?
Nine thirty.
Want to stop here? Or you want to do a few more lines? What do you say? We'll do a few more lines. Rav Kana Omer, Rav Kana says, the other gear says Rav Tachana Omer. Rav Tachana says, because Rav Kana was a Moraic sage. Rabbi Kahana? That's an interesting gear. So, see, Rav Kana is an Amora, and Pirkei Eliezer was before the Amoraim, so it's very hard to have the gear of Rav Kana. Rav Tachana is someone who's never mentioned anywhere else except for later on in Pirkei Eliezer and Perek Nun Gimel. Which would seem, assuming that he's some sort of Tana. Okay, but you have a different Rebbe Kahana, which
Rav is not even Shaya. No, it is.
Pasha, it could be not. I don't know. Al Kapanim, the Radal likes this gift of Rav Tachana because he says that the Seder Darius also has that gift. But my Pirkei Eliezer, the text says Rav Tana. Whoever it was, he said, Halucha is le'nivru min ha'aretz ela min ha'shamayim. The tablets were not created from the earth, they were not created from the world, let's say the physical world, the aretz. Elam in Hashemayim, they were from the heavens, from the spiritual world. Ma'aseh yadav shel Kadosh Baruch Hu, the handiwork of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, let's say Kibiyochel. Shemar says the pasuk Aluchos Ma'aseh Lekim Hema, the luchos, the tablets, are the product of Hashem. They are the product of Hashem. Ma'aseh Lekim Hema. Hema haluchos shahayu mekedem. What does it mean, Hema? Hema means like they are. It's superfluous to say that. Haluchos Ma'aseh Elokim. You could just say, the luchos are Ma'aseh Elokim. Why does it say Hema? As if like they're there. So it says, Hema haluchos shahayu mekedem. They are there from before, from way back when. It's from the 10 things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Erev Shabbos Ben Hishmashos, like we spoke about way back when in Perek Yutes. V'amichtav michtav Elokim hu. And the script is the script of Hashem. Hu ha-michtav shahayu mekedem. It's the script that was from way back when. Again, one of the 10 things that Hashem created, Erev Shabbos ben Hishmashos, during the days of creation. Chorus al-aluchis, the pasuk says, v'haluchis ma'aseh lekim heima, Famichtav mikhtav elikim hu chorus al haluches, engraved on the luches. So the Bayis HaGadol explains that the word engraved, usually we say chakuk. Engraved is chakuk, engraved on the luches. Why do we use a different word of chorus al haluches, to mean also, which also means engraved? It's sort of not standard usage. So from that, the Medrash says, "Al tikrei charus." Don't read it as charus, engraved, cherus. Rather, you should read it as cherus. Cherus meaning free. And Chazal and other, I mean the Braisa in Mesachas Avos at the end called Perak Kinyan Torah. So there says Rabbi Shulman Levi says, "Ein lecha ben chayin ala misha isek b'tara." So that's called freedom. Freedom is learning Torah. But there's another Nekula here also. Chazal tell us that when Klal Yisrael originally accepted the Torah, so they were charus, meaning charus mimalach hamavis. They were free from the clutches of the angel of death. They were no longer chayav misa. Because when Adam Arishan sinned by the chayt of the Eitz Hadas, so the Gemara says that the nochash hitil zuoma. It gave a certain zuoma, a certain dirtiness into mankind that made it that death came into the world. Sort of like a Jewish concept of original sin. You know, a dirtiness, the cause that man is going to die. But when they said Nasa v'nishma, so now they became above that. They lost that zuama. But they still lost the zuama. It says in the Pasuk, Ani omarti elihim atem uvnei elyon kulchem. I said that you are elihim, you're like an angel. Uvnei elyon kulchem, you're like angels. All of you are like angels. Ochein ka'odam t'musun. However, but achin ka'adam t'musin, like Adam, like Adam, you're gonna die. Right? When they sinned by the chet of the Egel Azov, so the gzera that mankind has to die came back. This is a shaila exactly how to understand. It doesn't mean that achin ka'adam t'musin means that just like Adam dies because of the sin of the Eitz Hadas, so now you also are gonna die because of the sin of the Eitz Hadas. Meaning you transcended the level of Adam when you said Nasav Nishma, and then when you did the Egel, so you went back down to the level of Adam, so now you're just like everyone else? Or is it pshat that, no, when you said Nasav Nishma, you transcended the level of Adam, and you're no longer, you're above death, but now that you did the Chet of the Egel, so now the Chet of the Egel is what's the reason why you die. Not because of the Chet of the Eitz Hadas, but the reason why Jews die is because of the Chet of Egel. Or no, Chet of Egel just brought them back to the level of everyone else in the world, that their people die because of the Chet of the Eitz Hadas. So it's a shaila how to understand it. Why do Jews die? Is it because of the Chet of Egel, or is it because of the Chet of the Eitz Hadas? That's a shaila. U'kesh'amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe p'sol l'cha shnei luchos avonim. When Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, engrave for yourself two stone tablets, so the Medrash says, "Machtzev shel sanpir yoy nivro l'moishe besech aholoi v'chatzovan." A machtzev is a a chisel that could chisel sapphire, was created for Moshe Rabbeinu inside his tent, and he used that to engrave the tablets. Shneimar vayivsal shnei luchos avonim kori sheinim.
And the right one second. Chisel? What do you mean to carve out the tablets themselves, not actually the words on the tablets, or also the words on the tablets?
It seems like it's talking about the words of the tablets as well.
I thought it was Pesalecha Shteluchos, meaning carve out two new tablets, and then I guess I thought Hashem would write on them.
So the MS is, I didn't really look into this, I mean, I didn't prepare it, but there is a whole question about who wrote the second tablets. Did Moshe Rabbeinu write it, or did Hashem write it? Oh. Who wrote the words of the second tablets? If you want, I could try to come up with some Maamar Kaimis about it for next week. Al Kaponim, the Radal brings that there's a different Medrash that says that this thing that he used to chisel it was created also from Sheshes and Mebreishes, just it was revealed to Moshe now. Here it sounds like it was created now, and then Moshe Rabbeinu saw it in his tent. It was created there. I don't know. Okay, fine. I guess we'll stop over here. And Be'ezer Hashem, we will meet again next week. Any questions? Mm-hmm.